Hi, everyone. Steve Adubato. That's right. You've tuned into Lessons in Leadership. Steve Adubato, my colleague, Mary Gamba. Hey, Mary, leaders in the law. Leaders in the law. We kick off the series with a real leader in the law. Mary, did you come up with the idea of Judge Linares, or did I?
You came up with the idea of Judge Linares, and you came up with the Leaders in Law series. And when you came up with it, I'm like, what would be so interesting about leaders in law? And now that we've gone down the rabbit hole, it has been intriguing, something different, something fun, and always engaging every time.
And a real leader in the law is Judge Jose L. Linares, retired Chief U.S. District Court, District of New Jersey, a partner at the firm McCarter and English, and chair there of the alternative dispute resolution practice. Good to see you, Jose.
Good to see you, Steve.
All right. I said this to you. We were talking on the phone the other day. We're talking about what we're going to talk about. This is what I'm fascinated by. If I say, Jose, your leadership journey to being where you are, who you are, not just at McCarter and English, but a leader in the federal courts before you moved to this role, who was a very significant leadership mentor in your life, please?
So, I mean, there's not one, Steve. I think that there have been a lot of people along the way who, you know, you looked at and you said, you know, I want to be like him, right? Whether there were people in, you know, in politics, people in medicine, even people in the law. They were people that were involved, for example, with the Hispanic Bar Association, the state bar. Joe Rodriguez, one of my colleagues in the federal district court, who served for many years there, was the president, the first Hispanic president of the state bar. And a tremendous, not only he was a community activist, but he was a great trial lawyer. He was a person who cared and who could influence people by his demeanor and his example. So if I had to pick one guy, especially in the field of law and my journey to the federal court, I would give Joe Rodriguez the nod on that.
One quick follow-up before Mary jumps in. I'm fascinated by the concept of mentorship and leadership. You've been mentored by many, as you said, and not enough time to mention all of them. And by the way, Jose was also the captain of his college football team. Was that Jersey City State University at the time?
Jersey City State.
Yeah.
Now it's called New Jersey City University.
Okay. I played my freshman year at Montclair State University, and then they disbanded the team after that. There's no correlation. I just want to put that out there.
No, understandable.
Okay. See, I said, let me disclose. Jose and I have a personal friendship relationship. Often it manifests itself on the golf course when he says incredibly mean things to me, and I want a 10-foot putt, and he says, you have to putt that out. That being said, Jose,
part of being a leader, Steve, you know, yeah, influencing other people to do the right thing.
We're going to talk about doing the right thing in a minute, but here's the thing I'm curious about. You've been mentored by many others. To what degree do you feel, Judge, a responsibility to mentor other leaders in the law, please?
It's not a question about mentoring leaders. It's about mentoring people who then become leaders, right? Mentoring people in the right way to get the right ideas, the right value, the right networking abilities, the right ability to deal with other people, to care about the right things. If you mentor people along the way like that, whether they be law students, high school kids, whatever it may be, I think that then, in essence, you're creating leaders of the future, right? Some of them are going to become leaders. So I think it's extremely important because at the end of the day, right, they are the future, not to use a cliche. So I think it's extremely important.
It really is. Mary, go ahead, because I'm going to talk to the judge about feedback in a second, giving people tough feedback that they don't want to hear. None of us want to hear it.
Go
ahead, Mary.
Judge, I would like to just follow up a little bit. You were talking about these young leaders that are up and coming. Talk about the relationship building component. I think all of us 50 and up understand the importance of relationship building. But now with Zoom, with AI, with more digital communication, I feel like a little bit of that is lost. As you're coaching these young adults in law, how do you reinforce the importance of relationships and how those relationships will impact your ability to do or their ability to do their job to their maximum ability?
Look, I think that this is a very important subject to touch upon, right? Because we're losing a little bit of the personal touch, right, with the people working from home, with the people, the ability of people to do things like this, do Zoom calls and Zoom meetings, and not coming to the office. And the part and parcel of the voyage of becoming a leader, and I, looking at my years, I think one of the most important things was showing up, going to events, networking, meeting people, and a little bit of that has now been lost, right? I think that the one-on-one interaction with these young people, I've been fortunate enough to mentor people at a lot of different levels, from the grammar school to high school. I was very involved as a member of the board of my high school. I was involved as a Essex County co-chair of the Essex County College Board, involved in mentorship at the state bar level, and then certainly at the federal court level, and now I'm a Carter. And I think the ability to talk to these people at a personal level, let them see what you do on a daily basis, the things you attend, how you behave in those places, who are the people you talk to, see other people, other leaders, whether it's somebody like Steve giving a speech somewhere, or whether it is the head of I don't know, Mountainside Hospital. It doesn't matter. It's about getting to meet people who are in leadership positions doing those things that they should be aspiring to do, and learning how to act that way, right?
Yeah, it's interesting as
And
in.
given, the feedback thing, we'll get
Sorry,
into it. You were going to ask about the feedback, right? Along the way, it is also
this is one
important.
of my favorite books, by the way. One second. Go on our website, our leadership library. We always pick the top 10 leadership books. This will always be in our top 10. It's called Thanks for the Feedback by Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen. Nobody says thanks for the feedback, Jose. They argue with the feedback unless you tell them they're great. Am I oversimplifying, my friend?
No, you're not. You're not. And I think that that's, honesty and feedback is very important component of this, because it's great to be a mentor and be a nice guy. Everybody wants to be a nice guy, right? Everybody wants to be liked. So there's one of the mistakes that a lot of mentors make is trying to become everyone's friend and trying to be liked by those who they're mentoring. And although it's important to establish a relationship of trust and a relationship, you got to do that by example, and you got to do that by giving the appropriate feedback. Because if you are counseling a person about, hey, it's important that you come into the office more often, because you can sit at the office and watch the more experienced lawyers talk about how to get a piece of evidence in, or how to talk to a client who owes a bill, for example, or how to speak to a client that's upset about something, right? Or how to sell a client, right? All of those things are part of becoming a better lawyer and a leader within the firm, for example. If they're not there, you got to give them the tough feedback. Look, you're not coming, you're not being there. You're not attending the right places. You're not acting the right way. You're not dressing the right way. You're not saying the right things. That's disrespectful. You're looking at your phone, whatever it may be that they may not want to hear. It's important, right? Because if they don't know what not to do, how are they going to do the right things to in their path,
Mary, the judge has it right. Mary knows where I'm going with this. The other book on one of our favorites is called General Colin Powell. I quote him in the original Lessons in Leadership book. Mary, what's the chapter? I quote General Powell in an interview I did with him 20 plus years ago. He said, sometimes great leaders have to what, Mary?
You always make me be the one to say it, but sometimes they have to piss people off.
That's why he makes you say it, right?
Exactly. Thank you, Judge.
Judge,
Look,
and Mary will jump back in.
that concept.
Go ahead, jump on that. You don't want to piss people off, Jose, but sometimes you do.
That concept comes into play during the toughest times, right? What you just said. For example, if you happen to be the chief of the federal court during a government shutdown, for example, right? Or during the time, and I was during the last shutdown. I was the chief then, and I'm sure the chief to this time around, Chief Baum, had a lot of tough decisions to be made in that courthouse, which maybe not everybody agreed with. If you are going to be true, for example, to the true, oath that you took as a federal judge to uphold the Constitution and make sure everybody gets a fair shake, some people are not going to be happy, right? Some people are not going to agree with the decisions you are making as a leader. But you have to understand that the first thing you need to do, if you're a leader, is to bring people towards a concept and why it is necessary. You have to get, people to buy into it. But once you do that, there are certain people who are not, no matter what. And you cannot be afraid to get those people mad, right? And get those people that word
Pissed
that you.
off. No. Yeah. Mary, last question on Mary's end. I will say this. You want to be liked all the time. You want to be popular all the time. You never want to make a decision that someone gets upset with. My view, I'll get off my soapbox after this. You can't lead. You can't. Mary, last one for the judge.
Speaking of leading, all of that, giving feedback, but also I would have to imagine, Judge, in the alternative dispute resolution practice, you need to change the way that you communicate. You need to change your delivery. You need to really choose the words that you're using, I would assume. Can you talk a little bit about that, whether you're giving feedback, whether you're trying to negotiate, mediate? How do you change and adapt your communication based on your audience and based on the message that you're looking to get across?
So it's a lot different. Doing what I do today as a mediator or arbitrator than it was doing it with a robe on, right? Because when you're doing it with a robe, that is a symbol of, you know, authority, a symbol of, you know, leadership, whatever. You come in now in the world that I live in now, where I am mediating, arbitrating international cases and this dealing with this giant corporations who are at each other's throats and sometimes individuals that are at each other's throats. You have to come across a little bit different, right? You almost have to lead them. You have to figure out where is the area here where, you know, you have to learn to understand more succinctly than you did as a judge. What exactly is it that they're looking for to get them to a place that they're going to say yes to the other side, right? And you have to sort of get involved in a conversation and a path with each side that leads you to a clear understanding of where they want to get. Because sometimes you're going to see an intersection of where they both want to get. They just want different things along the way to get there. And understanding that and being able to project both at least an illusion of authority, because you really don't have it as a mediation, right? As a mediator, you don't have it. You have it as an arbitrator because you're acting more as a judge. But in the mediation world, you really don't have the authority to enforce anything other than your ability to communicate with people, your ability to get them to follow you to a certain place. So you're still acting as a leader in a way, but you're acting a leader in a different way, in a more subtle way to get to a place where both sides agree. And it's become a little more, that whole world has changed also because of, you know, technology and so forth. It's a lot easier to deal with people in person,
right,
where you can grab somebody by the shoulder and say, let's go have a cup of coffee down the hallway and talk about this. Now you have to take them into a virtual room somewhere else. But, you know, there's benefits to it too. So,
And to the judge's point, if some of our leaders, and I'm not going to be political about this, if some of our leaders in Washington and in other high level places who sit together in a Capitol or don't even show up, wouldn't it be great if they were able to approach negotiation, compromise, alternative dispute resolution in the way the judge just said? I'm off my soapbox. That is the judge, Jose Linares. He's not just a great leader in law, but he's also a terrific friend and partner playing golf who is puts everything out. He plays by the rules. And I commit in 2026, I'm playing by every rule in golf to become, you're laughing already. He doesn't take it seriously.
Not laughing. Do you see me laughing? I'm smiling.
Yes. Judge Jose Linares. Thank you, Judge. Appreciate it.
Thank you for the time, Steve. I really appreciate it. Mary, thank you for your time as well.
Thank
Good
you.
Stuff. Thank you.
This is Lessons in Leadership. Be right back. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Vecino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, PragerMedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
At the Coriell Institute for Medical Research, we choose New Jersey because it's a great place to work and it's a great place to live. We work on understanding disease, but also curing diseases through drug development and clinical trials. this is such a central state and it's such a rich state in resources for medical research that it allows us to do the research that we need to do. This is New Jersey. It all happens here.
We are honored to be joined by Calvin R. Ledford, Jr., President, PSEG Foundation, Director of Corporate Social Responsibility at PSEG, one of our longtime underwriters. Good to see you, Calvin.
You as well. Good to see you. Happy to be here, and thanks for having me.
Always, and you've been a great partner for many years. Question, I've been asking people about their leadership journey to be where they are right now. Identify one, possibly two key mentors in your life that have helped you become the corporate philanthropic leader you are today. Calvin?
So if I go back early in my career, unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but he was a manager at PSE&G, a gentleman by the name of Jerry Valvano, who was a manager in the billing organization. When I was a bargaining unit employee at PSE&G, we took to one another as a mentor-mentee relationship, and he provided a lot of guidance over the years. And so I'm very thankful to some of the early lessons that he taught. And I have to be honest with you, in recent years, it's been Rick Thigpen.
How so, Calvin?
When I first came out of operations and started working for Rick back in 2013, although I had done a stint on the Newark School Board and the Planning Board, Rick was able to introduce me to the larger political game of our cities, counties, and the state. Coming from operations, I had much more of a PSE&G-driven focus and trying to accomplish the needs of the business. And Rick helped me to learn very earlier in coming into governmental affairs how that needed to be balanced with the needs of the community, the needs of elected officials. And between those two, I'm very thankful.
And you continue to be a mentor to others today.
Absolutely. You know, you pass it on. So whether it's through coming and speaking to youth in groups, there's times I get reached out to and find out about a young man or a young lady who is struggling with a personal issue, and I get asked to partner with them. And I'm always available to do that. And I look forward to continuing to do that. It's about passing on the skills to the future leaders.
The other side of that is interesting because the PSEG Foundation, and by the way, the website will be up right now. Look up the foundation, look up who they've provided grants to, not-for-profits, organizations like ours, others. I'm curious about the question of nonprofit leadership. And you and I have talked about this offline as well. When you and your team have to make very tough decisions, what kind of, quote, leadership in the not-for-profit community are you looking for? I may put it a different way. What are the top two or three leadership tools a nonprofit leader or leadership in an organization has to be in place in order for you to write, you and your team, to write a big check because they're spending that foundation money? Please, Calvin.
So it starts with, does that organization, does that leader, is the mission of that organization aligned with the pillars of the foundation? I mean, you know yourself, right? We're not in a position to fund everybody just
That's
because
right.
they happen to be a nonprofit, right? So our pillars are environmental sustainability, social justice, and equity and economic empowerment. So alignment is first. The second major decision is driven by past performance with regards to impact. Are you having an impact in the communities that you serve? Do other nonprofits, do community leaders, do leaders in the municipality or county see your nonprofit organization as one of the pillars of the community because of the impact that you have in what you're missing? And those are the two key drivers.
What about the fiscal stuff, the bottom line, the money stuff, how they manage their money?
So that's a part of the impact. right? So, part of our process is twice a year, we look for impact reports. So the impact reports are not just about who you served and the response to you serving them. It's also, did you use the resources in the way that you told us that you would? Show that to us. Let us see that. Are you an organization that if you learn during the course of your mission for that year,
That's right.
you really didn't need as much money as you asked for, and we may have provided to you? Do you come back and say, we have extra resources? Is it okay to reallocate or repurpose those resources? Or PSEG Foundation, would you like those resources back?
To
Those are
Calvin's
key
point,
drivers.
it's not only about economic or fiscal leadership, it's also about the issue of integrity. You know, as a not-for-profit leader, with our media not-for-profit production operation, it's the easiest thing in the world to ask for more money. But to Calvin Ledford's point, if you haven't spent that money, or there's money left over, there's an integrity issue. Are you just going to spend it to spend down on it to say you spent the grant you got, or are you going to have the integrity to have a conversation with a foundation leader like Calvin and say, look, this is,
Absolutely.
yeah, that matters. Last question on this. Your greatest satisfaction, because you've been in different roles as a leader and now in the philanthropic world, the corporate philanthropic world, what is the most significant positive benefit that you get, meaning the greatest satisfaction you get from the work you do every day with your colleagues at the foundation?
When there, it starts out as a partnership behind a mutually beneficial concept. When a nonprofit has a mission that aligns with our pillars, but also aligns with something very important to PSEG as an enterprise. I've just shared with you environmental sustainability is one of our key pillars, equity and economic empowerment, right? But I can't very well speak to an individual who may not be gainfully employed, who may be going through a period of time of food insecurity, about purchasing some newer appliances that will help you save and reduce the amount of energy.
That's right.
That's not your focus right now. So for us, if you're an organization that's into workforce development, and we're able to fund you, and that leads to some impact and outcomes where you've increased the viability of some families' lives, they're now positioned to be open to a conversation about environmental sustainability and using less energy, which we all know is better for our world. So when there's a mutually beneficial strategy and the outcomes align.
Well said. Calvin Ledford, Jr., President of PSEG Foundation, Director of Corporate and Social Responsibility. Calvin, thank you not just for this interview, but the support that you and your colleagues at the foundation provide to not-for-profits like ours and so many others tied to the pillars that you described. Thank you, Calvin.
Thank you for having me, Steve.
Always stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
Operating engineers are the men and women who move mountains and build New Jersey. Responsible for our region's tallest building, constructing our modern energy grid, cleaning up our environment, replenishing our beaches, cleaning up at ground zero, building our next great transportation corridor, and training the next generation of skilled builders. Headquartered in Springfield, IUOE Local 825 represents more than 8,200 heavy equipment operators, mechanics and surveyors in the construction industry, as well as stationary engineers who work in operations and maintenance buildings and industrial complexes across New Jersey and in the lower Hudson Valley of New York. With our training and skill, we do the job right. on time, and on budget. We keep the lights on and the trains running. We build the bridges and pave the roads. We protect the shore. We rebuild our cities. We clean up the past and we build our tomorrow. Operating Engineers Local 825. Better building begins here.
Welcome back to Lessons in Leadership. Steve Adubato with my colleague, Mary Gambit. Mary, so why don't we do this in Sylvester? We'll do this in post. I'm going to list the different mini video seminars that Mary and I have worked on. First one, career advancement in leadership. There's a mini seminar about how to advance your career. Easier said than done, but there are some tangible tips and tools. How about this one? Emotional intelligence. We mentioned that before. Dr. Daniel Goleman, the author of the person who coined the phrase emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence and leadership. A lot of people don't know emotional intelligence. Yes, your EQ, not your IQ and its connection to leadership. How about, Mary, being a more intentional leader and communicator? What the heck does it mean to be more intentional?
That is one of the hardest things to do. Literally, as I'm sitting here right now, I'm being intentional. I'm making a decision to be present, be in the moment, listen to what you're saying. So this way, instead of thinking about what I'm going to say next or what topic I'm going to go into, truly listening, being present and in the moment.
How hard is it to be intentional if you're checking your text messages? Or
it's absolutely impossible. Last night, Joey, my youngest son, called to check in, and I literally took my phone and turned it down, because if not, you'll end up talking and you'll just get distracted. Something will pop up, and I said, I want to be fully present in the moments that your 20-year-old actually gives you a call.
Yeah, I wasn't totally present while you were talking about Joey, because
nice.
I was thinking about the next
thing. You're thinking about the next thing. See, you're working on it too.
Keys to Difficult Conversation, one of my favorite books in our leadership library. Crucial conversations, talks for talking when the stakes are high. Yeah, hard conversation. How about this one? Creating a culture of engagement. Mary, we often say great leaders have to engage others. One of our favorite books, Change Your Questions, Change Your Life, Dr. Mary Lee Adams. Great questions, probing questions, and engagement. A minute left. What's the connection?
Stop with a closed-ended question. Stop saying to somebody, how was your day? Good. How are you feeling? I'm feeling okay. Instead, say, tell me something interesting about your day. Or, compared to yesterday, tell me a little bit about your mood today. You know, something like that.
What does that matter?
It does matter, because if not, you're going to get a yes, no, good, great. And number one, the person may not be telling you the truth. And number two, you're not getting enough information to be helpful.
Again, you can follow us. Mary, so not following you, just following me for this stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. They can follow you just because it's all streamlined right through there. So on Facebook, on X, and like I said, you could also go right to our website, and that's where the full library of our mini seminars lives. Go to Lessons in Leadership and then the mini seminars, and our website is stand-deliver.com.
This is Steve Adubato, Mary Gambo. We got to go. Lessons in Leadership. See you next time. This edition of Lessons in Leadership is made possible by the Buccino Leadership Institute at Seton Hall University, PragerMedis, Valley Bank, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, the North Ward Center, Gingoli Construction, the New Jersey Sharing Network, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, The Helix, Fedway Associates, Inc., the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Choose New Jersey, and Seton Hall University, showing the world what great minds can do since 1856.
This is Mary Gamba. If you want more leadership tips and tools, log on to stand-deliver.com. That's stand-deliver.com.
Promotional support for this edition of Lessons in Leadership with me, Steve Adubato, and my colleague, Mary Gamba, has been provided by NJ.com, NJBIA, and New Jersey Business Magazine, CIANJ, and Commerce Magazine, and the Meadowlands Chamber and Meadowlands Media.
At Mush Foods, we choose New Jersey because it's the heart of the Northeast. And we knew that if we can succeed here, we can succeed everywhere. It's hard to have this kind of manufacturing employees and also high educated employees in the same place. And here you have it. Then you have also the colleges that specifically focus on food science. So you have both of them. And that's the magic. This is New Jersey. You can do anything here.